Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Good noontime. This is the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour coming to you from Bolivar, West Virginia. And that music you heard and song, beautiful lyrics, was by Andy Offutt Irwin, who national level storyteller, master whistler, symphonic whistler, and a good friend to storytelling. This is Stosh Zielkowski, your co-host for the Storytelling Hour. Unfortunately, Fanny Crawford, the other co-host, is not with us today. Fanny has a bad case of laryngitis, which is actually probably the only thing that can keep her down. So we'll be flying solo today. Today, on the Storytelling Hour, we'll be doing stories about grandmothers and wise women. So, without further ado, let me get started with a tale that Fanny would be telling if she were here, but I have a copy of it, and I don't want her hard work finding its tail to go to waste, so we'll start the program with that. And today is March 18th. I'm sure that some of you had a good day yesterday celebrating with all your Irish friends. Here we go. This is titled A Winter's Tale. Once upon a time, a very long time ago, there was a very little girl named Maggie, and she had a brother named Johnny. The children were only 1 year apart. They were brought one evening to the very small and simple house of an old woman called Granny Devins, who lived by herself in a poor section of a very big city. This particular evening, Granny Devins was sitting by herself before the coal stove, as she did most evenings before bed. Granny's chair was pulled up close to the stove for warmth. It was a tiny house, just two rooms altogether, kitchen and bedroom, but the kitchen stove was also small, and coal was expensive if you were poor. Granny did not want to use any more coal than absolutely necessary. As Granny sat in her chair by the stove, mending her best apron, there was a knock at the door. Granny was surprised on opening the door to see on her doorstep a policeman, a man named Elliot, a man she knew as one of the peace officers who walked the streets of her neighborhood. But she did not know him well, only to nod to him on the street when they passed each other. But what was most surprising to Granny Devins, as they stood in the open doorway and she pulled her shawl tighter around her shoulders against the bitter cold wind, was that Officer Elliot was holding in each of his arms a bundle wrapped in old burlap. They were fairly large bundles. "I come, ma'am," said the officer, "to ask if you will take in these poor little ones to sleep in your kitchen tonight. Their mother has just died of a fever. They lived with her in a little alcove at the far end of Acorn Alley. I'm afraid to leave these children there tonight, for they are clearly already half-starved and half-frozen. God pity the poor, ma'am. God pity the poor. This has been a hard winter, and I fear it's not over yet with a night as cold as this one." Granny Devon had pulled the man into the room as he spoke and closed the door against the wind. She pulled her sofa up to the stove then, and when Officer Elliot set down the two bundles upon the worn sofa, she stood looking down at those two nearly frozen bundles. Moving aside a bit of the rough burlap bag to look at the dirty, pinched little faces, she said not a word, but wiped her eyes twice and blew her nose on her own small handkerchief. After a moment, she made an abrupt move to the kitchen, brought out some milk, which she put in a pan to warm on the coal stove, then went to fetch a nice biscuit that she had been saving for her own morning breakfast. When the milk was warm, she divided the biscuit and crumbled it into the only two cups she had in her kitchen, and she poured the warm milk over it. With this, she fed these two small orphans, and the two grown-ups watched as the color came slowly into the children's faces, and she knew she had given them enough for the time being. Officer Elliot said he would call for the children in the morning to take them to the almshouse, the poorhouse, when it opened. He left to continue his evening rounds, and Granny Devon's, closed and latched the door. No sooner had the door been closed than both the children found their voices and began to talk, quietly and shyly at first, and only to each other. But soon, their bellies full for the first time in several days, they began to perk up and look around. Johnny wanted to know if Granny Devon's was thinking about Easter Sunday, which he had heard would come early this year. Their mother had promised them an Easter basket if they were good. And they had, he said, both he and Maggie, been very good. So Johnny wanted to know if Granny had someone to give her a basket of candy for Easter. Granny said no, she wasn't expecting anything special for Easter. But then Maggie spoke up and said, her mom had said that God would always give a gift basket to someone who had no one else to provide a small gift. If they had been good and kind to others all through the winter. And throwing her small, thin arms around Granny's neck, Maggie declared that she was quite sure God will not forget you, my dear lady, because you have been very kind to us. And just then, a flash of light went through Granny Devon's mind. She turned and looked at the children, and it occurred to her that these children could well be considered an Easter gift. Come as they had, wrapped in burlap, and so grateful for a bit of crumbled biscuits and milk. So she said at once, "Children, I believe I made a mistake. I have had an Easter gift." Maggie sighed a small, satisfied sigh and said, "There, I knew you would get one." So Granny Devon's pulled one of her own two blankets from her own bed and tucked it around the children on the sofa. The next morning, when Officer Elliot arrived to fetch the youngsters, as he called them, his heart leapt to see them, clean and washed, sitting bundled on the sofa, each one in one of Granny Devon's two house dresses. She had burned every stitch of the dirty burlap and rags they arrived in, and was now busy cutting and stitching an extra flannel sheet into new child-sized shirts. "You can go right away, officer. These children are my Easter gift, and as they appear in want of a mother now, it seems I am intended to fill that role for them." Maggie and Johnny lived with Granny Devon's till they were old enough to go out on their own. That first Easter, Granny managed to make a small flannel bonnet with pretty ribbons made from an old yellow apron, and Officer Elliot brought round a shiny folding penknife he'd used as a boy himself for paring apples. So both children were blessed with gifts on that special Sunday of the Lord's resurrection. Granny Devon's taught Maggie to snip and stitch and earn her own living, just as Granny earned hers. Officer Elliot found a place for Johnny as an apprentice at a shop run by Elliot's brother-in-law. And Granny made sure that both children went to school regularly to learn to read and write and become well acquainted with the laws of the nation and the responsibilities of its citizens. If you were to peek in on Granny and her youngsters on a late winter's evening, you would see them all seated round the small coal stove, one paring apples, one stitching, and maybe one practicing sums or reading aloud to the other two while dinner cooked upon the stove. And every Easter, as winter winds became spring breezes, the sun shone brighter, the air began to warm and waft fragrantly through the tiny house with the smells of violets and new grass. Each one of the three would make sure there was a small gift or basket for the other two, because the end of winter and the coming of spring was a time for celebration and counting of blessings in that tiny house of two rooms, just a kitchen and bedroom altogether. The story was written by Fanny Jackson. Fanny Jackson was born enslaved in Washington, D.C., and emancipated by her aunt, Sarah Clark. Aunt Sarah, a freeborn woman, spent her entire life working and saving to free other family members. Aunt Sarah found young Fanny Jackson a job as house servant to another of her aunts. As everyone in the family had to work, that was part of the family's mission, to work to free others. Fanny Crawford found this story in a collection compiled and edited by Betty Collier Thomas. What a delightful and warm story. Granny Devins, a great model. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is your co-host, Stasia Okowski, flying solo today without Fanny Crawford, who is home taking care of a very bad case of laryngitis. So, today's theme is grandmothers and wise women. And that was our first station break. So, I think I will mention that if you would like to hear stories from the past broadcast, you can check in on our podcast at talltales.enlightened. Let me try that again. I'll move my tongue out of the way on my lips. talltales.enlightenedradio.org. And you can find a list of programs going back about 2 years and pick a date and check out the program that's there, with stories and information about storytelling in the community. I mentioned a new thing coming up for listeners. The Antietam Storytellers Guild, a brand new guild, a safe, friendly place to learn and practice the art of storytelling. The second meeting of this group will be March 20th at 7 o'clock in Hagerstown at 28th South Potomac Street, Hagerstown, Maryland, in the balcony meeting area. Everyone is invited to tell or just listen and learn. Get involved now for our Liars Contest coming up in April. And I will mention more details about that after the next story. So, grandmothers and wise women. This is a personal story. In 1962, in the summer, I was finished with my 3-year tour in the Army. I came home, unfortunately, the day after my mother passed away. The next few weeks were miserable. Of course, my father, whose bride of 37 years had died, was devastated by the loss of his partner. And I had made plans to try to go to college. I was supposed to go to New Mexico to go to a college where one of my best friends growing up was a student. However, because of the loss of mom, I didn't want to go too far away from my dad. And my uncle Joe, who was mother's older brother and a priest, made arrangements for me to go to Mount St. Mary's College in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Well, it was arranged that I would be able to attend classes and eat meals on the campus. However, I was not able to live on the campus because the dorms were full. At that time, in 1962, Mount St. Mary's campus population was 725 male students, and many priests as teachers, a few lay teachers, and also on the campus was the Mount St. Mary's school, separate from the college, for men studying to be in the priesthood. My Uncle Joe took me to a nearby parish house and a small country church, St. Anthony's, that was right on the edge of the campus, just a couple hundred yards from the school's property, and wanted me to meet his friend, Father Harry. He thought that Father Harry might be able to put me up in the parish house. Father Harry lived there alone. He had a housekeeper who came in and made meals for him and took care of the cleaning and things, but did not live there. So he had plenty of room. A short conversation between my uncle and Father Harry resulted in Father Harry speaking to me privately and asking me a question. Do you really want to live with a priest in a parish house? I said, Father, I just finished 3 years in the army, and I can't think of anything worse than living with a priest in a parish house, because I'd have to really be on my P's and Q's and, you know, be quiet. And he laughed, and he said, well, I'm going to make a phone call. He made a phone call to a small house just across the street from the church. The church was on a backcountry road at the edge of the campus of Mount St. Mary's, and in that small house across the street, across the road, was a couple. The man was 92, the woman was 79, Mr. and Mrs. Roddy. For the next year, I lived with the Roddys. It cost the princely sum of $1 a day. I had a nice small bedroom in the back of the house, a bathroom right in the hallway there. And I must say, even though I was lonely at times and spent a lot of time in that room, I was treated wonderfully by the Roddys. I only had one grandparent alive while I was growing up, my father's mother, and she died when I was 13. She and I had no real relationship. Any time I was in her presence, I think I only had her spoke. She only spoke to me three times that I can recall while she was alive, and I had no grandparents, basically, growing up. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Roddy were super alternate grandparents. Mrs. Roddy frequently brought me a plate of cookies and a glass of barely warm milk late at night before I turned in and before I finished my studying. The Roddys went to bed early. I don't believe they were ever up later than 9:30 or 10 o'clock that I can recall. Every Monday, Mr. Roddy made sure that there were some cookies, treats set out, and a soda to drink while he and I watched Stoney Burke. It makes my heart feel so good to just think of how he would come down the hallway to my bedroom, knock on the door and say, "Stanley, it's time for Stoney." I would stop whatever I was doing, go out to the living room, and he and I would sit and watch Stoney Burke. Mrs. Roddy also would be in the room, but basically she did some knitting or crocheting or some kind of even sewing, maybe patching things. And I don't think she paid attention to the TV at all, but I frequently saw her looking at the two of us and smiling. And for 1 year, from early September of 1962 until June of 1963, except for the few visits I made to Baltimore to my father's house, I lived in a wonderful, warm grandparents enfolding me with love and care and consideration. I also learned not to feel so proud of myself early on. I played soccer in college, and being a brand new student there and having just finished 3 years in the Army, I wanted to show the members of the team that I was serious about playing. And so I got up most mornings and would go out for a 2 mile run on the back roads. Shortly after I began doing this, and certainly feeling very proud of myself for getting up so early, before breakfast, before classes, to go and run 2 miles, can keep myself in good shape. I had occasion one morning at 6 o'clock, as I was going out the side door of the house, to meet Mr. Roddy, who was coming across the road from church. Father Harry had a service at 5:30 every morning, which Mr. Roddy attended and hadn't missed for many years. So while I was patting myself on the back for getting up early and running 2 miles, Mr. Roddy had already been up, had a small breakfast, and had gone to church and prayed, no doubt, for me, Mrs. Roddy, and many other people in the community. At the end of my freshman year in college, I decided that I would like to live in the dorm. There was space that had opened up, and so I told the Roddies I would be leaving. They were sad at first, but I told them that I had a friend who was a year older at the college, who envied me living with them because of having a private bedroom and a place where he could concentrate on his studies. He was a very serious person who became a PhD in economics and really wanted to try to live with the Roddies as I did. I introduced Frank to the Roddies, and they got along beautifully. And so in September, probably in August of 1963, Frank moved in with the Roddies and lived there for the next 2 years until he graduated from college. So our fitting theme today, grandmothers and wise women, benefited me as a 21-year-old, and I have never forgotten the wonderful lessons I learned living with Mr. and Mrs. Roddy about kindness and care for someone who's in their home. So that's the story of my freshman year in college as a boarder for $1 a day. You're listening to the Storytelling Hour on enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And at this time, I'd like to bring you up to date on some things that are happening around the area in storytelling. First of all, tomorrow evening at 7:30 at Shepherd University, you can see Alton Takayama Chung, a marvelous storyteller from Hawaii who will be telling tales from Hawaii and some Japanese tales. The program is titled Pineapples and Kimchi, a program of Korean folktales and personal stories about the Korean experience in Hawaii. It's a joint presentation with the Shepherd University Common Reading Program. I've met Alton Chung before at a storytelling event in Pittsburgh, and he is a wonderful storyteller, and I'm sure you would enjoy it. Costs $12 at the door, and you can also buy a season ticket, which will save you money in the long run, because the series is monthly for 9 months. And mostly it's on the second Tuesday of the month, but not always the second Tuesday, because the storytellers that are hired to come and do perform at the Speak Story series often have conflicts with the second Tuesday because they're traveling or they're performing someplace else. And so the director of the Speak Story series, Adam Booth, tries to accommodate them, and sometimes that date becomes the third Tuesday of the month. So, coming up in the Speak Story series after this month, I'm going to just give you a couple of names for the next few months. Michael and Carrie Klein, a team, will be here for a week in April. And on April 9th, Tuesday, April 9th, which is the second Tuesday of April, they will be performing. And once again, at Shepherd University. And you can get details about their performance by going to speakstoryseries.com on the website. And it will give you a list of all the storytellers coming up and the dates and the places, because sometimes the performance will not be held in Reynolds Hall. Sometimes will be held in a different place because of the space needed for the program. So, we've had two stories. One that Fanny Crawford found, and one that is a personal story of mine about a wonderful grandmotherly woman. And here, I think we'll lighten things up a little bit, although we haven't had any terrible sadness. But I am broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is the Storytelling Hour, enlightenradio.org. So, I'm going to try a little thing. Fanny sometimes sings. And does voices and this. I will attempt this. I enjoy singing, but I do much better if I have an accompaniment. This way, I'll have an accompaniment in my head. This is about a grandmother and something that she used to help people. Do you remember Grandma's lye soap? Good for everything in the home. And the secret was in the scrubbing. It wouldn't suds and couldn't foam. Then let us sing for Grandma's lye soap. Sing all out, all over the place. For pots and kettles, the dirty dishes. And for your hands and for your face. Little Herman and Brother Thurman had an aversion to washing their ears. Grandma scrubbed them with the lye soap, and they haven't heard a word in years. Then let us sing for Grandma's lye soap. Sing all out all over the place. For pots and kettles, the dirty dishes, and for your hands, and for your face. Mrs. O'Malley, out in the valley, suffered from ulcers, I understand. She swallowed a cake of Grandma's lye soap, has the cleanest ulcers in the land. Then let us sing for Grandma's lye soap. Sing all out all over the place. The pots and pans and dirty dishes, and for your hands, and for your face. Well, that is a great old song, and it is usually accompanies a story about a preacher who quotes a number of things from the Good Book, not always exactly accurate. It's his version of the Good Book, and it's usually sung at the end of his sermon, and the audience is invited to join in. So if you ever have the chance, look up those lyrics. It's called Grandma's Lye Soap, and you might also find it on YouTube with performances by a number of different people. Okay, so this is the Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And there's another series in the area, a storytelling series. This is the sixth year of Stories in the Round, which is based in Hagerstown and was created and is administered by our co-host, Fanny Crawford. Now, this first performer of the season, season six, in March, is Anaquale Anense Sempho. Whew, that is a difficult name to pronounce. I've been practicing it. Anaquale Anense Sempho, and she will be performing at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike. And that will be at 7 o'clock, and it will be on March 25th, 1 week from tonight. So it's $10 if you call ahead of time and reserve a seat, or $12 at the door. And for more detailed information, you can contact Fanny Crawford at 301-730-1638. Or you could write to her at fanitsky@hotmail.com. That's FANITSKY at hotmail.com. And Fanny can fill you in. There is also the opportunity to get a season ticket. And season tickets are available for $80 for the 10 sessions, which means you'll have a very good savings. Even if you called in every month, the season ticket would save you 20% instead of calling in and reserving a seat for $10. So for $80, you get all 10 sessions. And in April, Janice Curtis Green will be at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 13245 Searfoss Pike. And if you're traveling on, if you happen to get to Hagerstown area and don't know how to go through the streets of the town, the best way to do is get on 81 North and take exit 7B. And then 1 mile up the road on the right will be the church. Okay. Maybe I'll announce a couple more of the people coming to the story, Speak Story series in Shepherdstown, and the stories in the round at Hagerstown. So, April 25th in Sharpsburg, Maryland, at 8 o'clock, that's a Thursday evening, at Bender's Tavern, there will be a Liars Contest, the second Sharpsburg Liars Contest. The first one was in January, and looks like this is going to be a quarterly event. And there is no charge for this, but since Bender's does provide the possibility of food and drink, no charge for patrons to come in and hear the Liars Contest, which is guaranteed fun. And you can also get a sandwich or a dinner or something to drink. And I promise you, you will have a marvelous time. Okay, so here we go. Grandmothers. I mentioned it a little earlier. For all practical purposes, I didn't have a grandmother. And I wanted to, over the past few years, I've been working on a story about my mother, about the time, I almost said the time she died, about the time, the frame, about the time in my life when she passed away. And in working on the story about that time and about the relationship I had with my mother, it's always been very difficult because we did not have a warm, fuzzy relationship. I was born under difficult circumstances. I was the only child my mother had in a hospital. My siblings, two older brothers and a sister, were all born at home. But my mother had a fall the day I was born. The doctors at the hospital where my father rushed my mom said that I would be stillborn. There was no heartbeat and they couldn't detect anything. However, by whatever stroke of luck, or in the case of my mother, miracle, a blessing, I was born perfectly healthy. My mother decided that that was a sign from the Almighty that I should follow in her brother's footsteps and become a priest. Over the years, she and I battled about her desire for me to be a priest. She didn't want me to date. And at the time, I brought a girl home for dinner, turned out to be a disaster. My mother and I did not see eye to eye on many things. And so when I was graduated from high school, I decided to go in the Army. It was a way of getting some distance between the two of us. What prompted me to want to write about my mom was that the last time I was home and going back to Germany, she and I had an argument at a public place in the airport. And that was the last time that we spoke to each other. And that caused me a great deal of problem and mental turmoil. And I was probably spoke with a mean voice and said mean things to my mother. And never got a chance to apologize or to try to patch things up. So, I was talking to my oldest niece about this problem on storytelling, and especially about her beloved grandma, whom in our family, grandma is called Bushi. And I said, you know, Lydia, you always got along with Bushi. And I wonder if you could tell me something about that from your perspective now, because she passed away in 1962. It's so many years ago, and I have a difficult time remembering pleasant things about my mother. So she wrote me a letter. Now, Lydia and I spent a lot of years together as children. Her father was killed in the Korean War. So shortly after that, in about 1951, my sister and Lydia moved into our house. Lydia was a baby. She lived there until my sister got remarried a number of years later. And as a young boy, I took care of Lydia a lot. I took her for walks. I was her babysitter in many cases. And when she began school, and I was in the eighth grade and she was in the kindergarten, I walked her to school every day and I walked her home. We have always been just like a big brother and a little sister, and she and I have been very close all these years. So she told me she would write a letter to explain to me her relationship with her Bushi. And here it is. She has Lydia has two autistic grandsons. They're twins. And so she began the letter like this. I loved my Bushi. I realized the answer when I thought about my relationship with her was the same as I have with the boys. My grandsons love me because I love them unconditionally. This is the way my Bushi loved me. I knew that no matter what I did, she would not stop loving me. It was manifested in the way she took care of me. She bathed me, dressed me, fed me every day. She always pinned a miraculous medal to my undershirt so that the Blessed Mother would protect me when Bushi wasn't around. She made me nutritious meals and encouraged me strongly to eat them, but at least made sure I had a bowl of cereal if I didn't agree with her about what it tasted good. When I was outside playing on Ann Street, we grew up in Baltimore, she would check up on me periodically to make sure I was okay. She allowed me my imagination when playing by myself and sometimes participated. I would play under the kitchen table while she was working in there. I would swing in the basement while she was doing laundry. She took me down to Broadway with her when she went shopping, and to Mr. Andy's across the street. She took me to High's on Ann Street and bought me ice cream cones and big pretzel sticks. She let me get penny candy at Mr. Friel's. She was an extension of my mother and the person that my mom entrusted me to when she was working. In the afternoon at 1, we would sit together and watch Liberace. She always carried buttered bread for me so I wouldn't get car sick on the trolley. Both Chaji, that's grandfather, and Bushi took me with them on vacation and trips in the car. My place was standing in the front seat between them. Imagine that. Standing in the front seat between them as a child, not yet at school age. I can also remember sitting on Bushi's lap in the car. When I grew taller than her, I started teasing her and calling her Shorty. She took the ribbing good-naturedly because she knew I didn't mean it disrespectfully. When there was a thunderstorm, she would take me and the glow-in-the-dark Blessed Mother, and we would stand at the top of the cellar steps until the storm passed. I was not afraid of storms until she did this, but I know in her mind she was protecting me. I did give her a run for her money, and she took it. When you taught me how to climb on the awning over the back door, I did it without you one day and waited for her to come looking for me. To her credit, while concerned for my safety, she didn't yell or punish me, just told me not to do it again so I wouldn't fall. I also know she wasn't too happy when I told her that Eddie, the Puerto Rican kid down the street, was my boyfriend. He was older and had kissed me. I think I was 5. I got all kinds of warnings when I started to go through puberty. I learned different things by listening to conversations between her and Mom. She tried teaching me to crochet once. I tried it, but it wasn't exciting enough at the time. Many times over the years, I wish I would have paid closer attention and learned. She was very good at it. Our cousin Melissa has her talent. It was her job to teach all the kids how to pick crabs. Growing up in Baltimore, if you didn't learn how to pick crabs, you would be left out of a lot of good times at the family gatherings. She would pick the meat while you banged on a crab claw. I used to love to watch her make hamburgers. She had a certain way of putting the meat into shape, and that fascinated me. I can't explain why, but it did. The last time I was really with her was July 4th, 1962. Mom and Dad had a cookout, and everyone came to our house. I ate sitting next to Bushy while she picked crab meat for Joey. Joey is Lydia's younger brother. I knew she had cancer, but had been told that she didn't know. I had asked her once where your womb was located, and she said she didn't know. I know she had to go for cobalt treatments and realize now how much pain she must have been in, but she never showed it. Over the next 2 days, she was placed in the hospital. She was in Bon Secours Hospital. Her gallbladder had burst and peritonitis had set in. They were going to operate when she was a bit stronger. I got a chance to see her in the hospital that Friday. I was the only grandchild allowed to go because I was 12 years old. I got a chance to see her and kiss her. I had planned to come back on Saturday, but I was asked to give up my spot so other adults could go see her. I went with Aunt Charlotte to their house so she could get some clothes for her children. And while she was gathering things, I was standing in her dining room. It was a hot July day. All of a sudden, an ice-cold wave passed through me. I looked at the clock, and it was exactly 4 p.m. When he got back home, Chachi called. He talked to my father and Aunt Charlotte, and then asked to talk to me. He said simply that my grandmother had passed away. I asked him what time she had died, and he said 4 p.m. I felt then that my grandmother had come to say goodbye to me. Going through Bushy's things after the funeral, they found lots of information about cancer in her dresser drawer. She knew all along that she had cancer. She was strong. She was a very strong woman, had a strong personality that you didn't mess with. She loved her family and took care of them as best she could. Why did I love her? Because she loved me, unconditionally. In a conversation shortly after I received this letter from Lydia, we discussed my difficult relationship with my mother and her wonderful, loving relationship with the same woman, her Bushy. And Lydia said that over the years, she thought the reason I had a difficult time with my mom was I was headstrong, and I gave her a lot of opposition at every turn. And I didn't really need as much love as Lydia did. Until my sister remarried, Lydia was an orphan. Her father had been killed when she was only 10 months old. She never got to know the man who was her birth father. She told me that she felt her Bushi made a conscious decision to give her as much love as possible under every circumstance because she missed the loving that she would have gotten from her dad. And that I had a loving father at home all the time, and two brothers and sister who loved me, and that she probably didn't have the strength to battle me and knew I would be safe and loved by everyone, and she did the best job she could. After reading that letter, I was able to finish the story about my mother, and it now has a satisfactory ending in my mind, that instead of judging her for her failures, I should remember her with love for her successes, and especially for the way she took care of a little girl who didn't have a father for so many years. So, that's the story of a grandmother who made such a great impact on a little girl that 50 years later, as she has a set of autistic twin grandchildren, both boys, she showers them with unconditional love. She learned the lesson well from her Bushi. Thank you. You're listening to the Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. And you can hear podcasts of our stories going back, programs for the last 2 years or so, broadcast every Monday. But those podcasts are on the net all the time. So you can click on that talltales.enlightenradio.org and you can select from many of the dates going back a couple years and hear stories told by me at times and Fanny Crawford. And I'm sure you'll be able to find many of those broadcasts that you'll find interesting. And I do have a little announcement based on a note that we got about a show that we did 2 weeks ago. And that, oh, yes, 2 weeks ago. And it was a concern, a kind of a criticism, but gentle, about my telling Fanny a riddle, a math riddle, on the air. And we talked about it, and she tried to solve it, but couldn't. And I did not give the answer on the air. And because of that, there were some people who listened who were not happy because they couldn't solve the riddle, and either they had to look it up on the internet, or they were frustrated because they didn't know the answer. And so we got one handwritten note that was sent to us complaining about that. So in the future, I will do my best not to give out a riddle unless we say, here's a riddle and you should call in and give a phone number that you can call in and try to guess the answer. And we will give the answer then over the phone, or else maybe what we should do is occasionally have a riddle that we will answer a la click and clack, the famous brother team that was on the radio for many years, the mechanics from up in the Massachusetts area. And then we could have a weekly, almost like a weekly contest. That sounds like it could be fun. So I would like to give a little bit of information about the story, about the person who wrote the story that I used at the beginning, The Winter's Tale. Fanny Jackson was a house servant to George Henry Calvert, the great-great-grandson of Lord Baltimore, the one who settled Maryland. Her employer sent her to public school for a time so that she learned to read and write. Eventually, through her own commitment to learning and determination to become a teacher for other youth, she was accepted at Oberlin College, one of the first institutions of higher learning in the United States. And this was one of the first institutions that accepted African Americans. She graduated from Oberlin in 1865 with a degree in classics, in an emphasis on Greek, Latin, and mathematics. It's very unusual for an African-American woman at that time. And immediately she went to work teaching at the Institute for Colored Quakers in Philadelphia. She taught Greek, Latin, and mathematics and later served as principal for the Institute Girls High School. When the superintendent of the Institute was appointed to U.S. Minister to Haiti in 1869 by President Grant, Fanny Jackson became the first African-American woman in the United States to head an institution of higher learning. She remained there for 37 years and is given credit for educating some of the leading minds of the late 19th and early 20th century. Fanny was active in Black Woman's Club movement and had direct experience with the tragedy and suffering of black children in Philadelphia slums, alleys, and hovels where they lived. And this story is an adaptation of her original story, first published in 1880 under the title Christmas Eve Story, in the primary publication of the African Methodist Evangelical Church, the Christian Recorder, where it was widely read and appreciated. So it was adapted by Fanny. I almost said adapted by Fanny Crawford, but of course that wouldn't be true. Adapted by Fanny Jackson. So keep in mind, remember the two series we have, Stories in the Round at Hagerstown at the Universalist Church of Hagerstown, 13245 Searfoss Pike. And if you want more detailed information, you can call Fanny Crawford at 301-730-1638 or write to her, email Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com. And remember, Speak Story Series at Shepherd University. And you can get information by going on the internet and looking up speakstoryseries.com. Well, it's come that time. This is Stasi Olkowski, co-host for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show and shouting out to Fanny Crawford. Hope she feels better and gets rid of that laryngitis. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for
Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar.